You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Useless Information Podcast. I am Steve Silverman.
Useless information.
So as I mentioned in my last podcast, which is titled Bad Man Billy, there was a movie made based on the life of Billy Cook, and it was titled The Hitchhiker, and it came out in 1953. And my wife, Mary Jane, is here again to join us to review that movie. So say hello.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. And now, if you didn't listen to that last podcast, I encourage you to go back and listen to that first. So go back, listen to that, and then listen to this review that we do of the movie. So that way you can compare the two. And as we go through our review of the movie, we are going to compare the real events to how it was portrayed in the movie. So the movie is titled The Hitchhiker, and it's two words, hitch hyphen hiker. And as I said, it's from 1953. It's a black and white movie, and it runs just 70 minutes. It's a very, very short movie. So the movie begins with the following text on the screen, and I'll read it to you. This is the true story of a man and a gun. The gun belonged to the man. The car might have been yours or that young couple across the aisle. What you will see in the next 70 minutes could happen to you, for the facts are actual. And as we go through this, you're going to see that they're not really that actual, but we'll compare it with the true story as we go through the story. Right after that, you see a hitchhiker being picked up by a couple. They have a convertible car, they pick him up, and you'll note that the license plate says Illinois, which is the same as the Carl Mosser family that I mentioned in the podcast, the previous podcast. And of course, the hitchhiker kills them. And none of that brutality is shown. Basically, you'll see the woman's purse and belongings fall out of the car. And then a police officer comes up and, of course, finds the husband or the boyfriend slumped against the wheel. Now, in real life, five people were killed, the couple, and the Carl Mosser couple and their three children. But they only showed two here. And I don't know if you came across this in your research, but apparently they were just concerned about the movie being overly violent, so they decided to limit the number of people that were killed.
Yeah, I mean, I read that. I think that it seemed like they were overly strict, and I don't know if it had anything to do with the fact that the director was Ida Lupino. I know we're going to talk a lot about her, but...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, and then, of course, there are headlines as a nationwide manhunt for days. And then he goes on, and this is only in the third minute of the movie, he kills a second person. And later on in the movie, they identify the person as William Johnson. Now, all the names in the movie are fictitious. So William Johnson in real life would have been Robert Dewey, the salesman from Portland, who was the last person that Billy Cook killed. And this is where the movie actually gets going. The hitchhiker, whose name is Emmett Myers in the movie, who's played by William Talman, is picked up by two buddies who are going to San Felipe, at least how they say it in the movie. Mary Jane, my Spanish-speaking wife, how's it really pronounced?
Well, you would pronounce all the letters, so it'd be San Felipe.
Okay. I'm learning something every day. Anyway, they're supposedly going to San Felipe to fish. In real life, they were going to hunt. And in fact, there's really only three main characters in this movie. In fact, Mary Jane, how many women were in this movie?
In a sense, there were no women. There was just a small girl, and she had a very small part.
Yeah, yes. In reality, the cast is very small. I mean, you have these three main characters I'm going to mention, yes. And then a few other peripheral characters. But There's no women in this movie at all.
No.
And we'll talk about the director in a minute.
Sure. That'd be great.
Yeah. So anyway, the two guys in the car, these two guys who are going fishing, they are Gilbert or Gil Bowen, who's played by Frank Lovejoy. And he's married with kids, and he's just the passenger in the car. And then driving is Roy Collins, who's played by Edmund O'Brien, and he's a mechanic. And their lives are about to change. That's when they pick up the hitchhiker, who in real life is Billy Cook. In the movie, he is called Emmett Myers, and he's played by William Talman, who I recognized on the screen, but I couldn't quite place him. We later learned after we watched the movie, he was in Perry Mason, and I haven't seen that series since I was a kid, yet I still remembered his face.
Yes. Yes, I do remember us talking about that.
Yeah. Now, the movie was directed by Ida Lupino, who wrote the script with her husband, Collier Young. Now, Mary Jane, you wanted to talk a little bit about Ida Lupino, so why don't you tell everybody about her?
Sure. She was a very accomplished actress, and she not only directed this movie, but she directed many TV episodes, and some of them you may be familiar with, Gilligan's Island, The Untouchables, Bewitched, and she also wrote short stories and composed music. She was just very versatile.
Yeah, she directed one of, I wouldn't say one of my favorite episodes of Twilight Zone. I'm a big fan of The Twilight Zone, and she did one of the last episodes, and the last few episodes of The Twilight Zone are pretty bad, but the one she did, which is called The Mass, is actually quite excellent. And just to give you an idea of what happened in this show, is that this man is dying, and of course his children and grandchildren want all his money and everything he's leaving to them. And therefore, he gives each one a mask to wear on Mardi Gras, and it reflects their personality, you know, greed and things like that.
Right.
And then he dies, and they take off their mask, and their faces have assumed the shape of the mask and is permanently imprinted on their faces. So it's a very memorable Twilight Zone, and it's very well filmed. And clearly, that's because she was an accomplished director.
Yes. I mean, I don't think I've seen that particular episode, but... even just the movie that we're talking about right now, I thought she did a great job directing. So
yeah, let me read a quote from the April 23rd, 1953 San Francisco Examiner as a review of the movie The Hitchhiker. That a woman directed this picture is something to consider. Not that I underestimate the potentiality of any woman director, but this is so definitely a man's story that the results are amazing. Ida Lupino deserves high praise for an intelligent drama that is sound in every detail.
So I know the critic meant that comment as a compliment to the director, but when you think about it, men have been telling women's stories forever, and nobody's ever shocked by that ability, whereas with her, they were surprised that she could actually manage to do that.
So true. Mm. Which leads me to my question of the day. How many women were directing movies in Hollywood in the early 1950s? Now, Mary Jane, do you know the answer?
I most certainly do.
You're supposed to say you don't know. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. I actually know you know the answer. So what we'll do is we'll wait to the end of the podcast and let everybody else know what the answer is.
Okay. So I did want to make some comments just about the style of her directing. I felt that with the dialogues, that the timing was very good. At one point, there was a conversation just between the two buddies in the car, and it seemed like real people having a just small talk conversation. And I think you have to be a good director to make that seem that realistic.
Yeah. I thought the movie was very well, it was very well written, very well acted. And whoever did the editing, I assume she had a big part in that. It was very, very well edited. I wouldn't say the movie was perfect. There were a few scenes where I thought maybe, you know, like they were throwing punches and you could see they were just missing each other. So the camera angle wasn't exactly right. But right. But you kind of get the impression, because really this is just a movie of them driving through Mexico being held hostage, these two guys being held hostage by the hitchhiker. And you kind of get the impression this is a fairly low-budget movie.
It's a very low-budget movie. We commented on the fact that there's Spanish being spoken and there's no subtitles.
Yeah.
It may not have been necessary, but typically in a movie with that much dialogue in another language, you would probably have subtitles.
Yeah. Now, I have to tell you, I don't speak Spanish. I mean, I know a little bit of Spanish. But I really didn't find it to be a problem. There was one spot where I asked you what were they talking about, and you had to translate for me. But overall, I had no problem. You kind of knew
right.
what the police were talking about,
the
investigators.
It was very visual. You kind of had an idea. So
right.
But there were other ways that they tried to save money. For example, they used the same landscape again and again, the car driving in kind of the same area.
Right.
She didn't have to pay for set rental because of that, right? And so there are ways that she definitely had to have be careful with the money, right?
Yeah, even the police car, there was one police car and there's no sirens or there's no lights on top. It just says policia across the side of it. It's like someone just put a decal on. Now we got a police car,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And in reality, I don't think there were more than three vehicles in the whole movie. There was one scene where a helicopter went by, but you kind of got the impression they were really filming this on the cheap, you know?
Yes. Yeah. It was definitely a B movie. It was short. I mean, 70 minutes. All the signs of a B movie.
Yeah. But overall, I thought it was pulled together very well for what she had to work with. I thought she did a really nice job.
Yeah. I mean, and she, as you said, she co-wrote the script and everything, and that was good. The storyline wasn't so rich, unfortunately, though, but I think they were really trying very hard to stick to some of the facts of what happened with Billy Cook. And so you pay a little on the other end because the story doesn't have as much action and much going on.
Right. I think the movie would have been better if they didn't just stick to the portion where he's taken these two men hostage in Mexico. Because honestly, there's very little known about that period of time. They didn't focus on any of the preliminary stuff where most of his crimes occurred. They didn't, that was all glossed over in the first 3 minutes of the movie, where I think it would have been, as you said, a richer movie if they had expanded on it.
Yes. And, perhaps she wanted to avoid the violence. That was all taken care of in the first few minutes. It was always off screen. Maybe that was her choice. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But
yeah, but it would have been interesting, like the hunt for the bodies and, because they were found in a well. Now, this, there were little hints of the true story sprinkled throughout it. As they're driving through Mexico, what did they encounter?
Well, in the desert, they saw a well. So there's right. kind of a reference to that situation, but it didn't.
They're kind of hinting, if these two men, get out of line, they're going to end up at the bottom of this mine shaft or well, which is, of course, what happened to the real family in real life.
Right.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The Nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the Nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
I have to say that William Talman was perfect as Emmett Myers, the Billy Cook character. Right. I mean, he looked mean. He acted mean. He really, really fit this role.
Well, actually, she did go visit him and interview him in prison. So that was the person she met, you know. But from your podcast, we actually know that he was very much a broken person because of his childhood, right? We learned that his mother died at five, that his family was so destitute, he had to, that the whole family had to live in a cave for a while. And then he was, you know, shuffled around in different foster homes. So it kind of explains better the character. But in the movie, we don't see that. We just see the person she met in that prison, who was clearly a very angry young man who had committed a lot of, you know, murders.
Yeah, and I should mention, this movie came out 4 months after he was executed. Right. So really, the public's image of him was this really, really evil man, and that is the way he's portrayed in the movie.
Right, that's all people really knew about him. They didn't know that much about his childhood, actually.
Now, she does hint at one point that he did have a difficult life. So let's take a listen to that clip.
Yes, okay.
You guys are soft. You know what makes you that way? You're up to your necks in IOUs. You're suckers. You're scared to get out on your own. You always had it good, so you're soft. Well, not me. Nobody ever gave me anything, so I don't owe nobody. My folks were tough. When I was born, they took one look at this puss of mine and told me to get lost. Well, I didn't need them. I didn't need any of them. Got what I wanted my own way. When you get the know-how and a few bucks in your pocket, you can buy anything or anybody. Especially if you got them at the point of a gun. That really scares them.
So I just wanted to say with that little excerpt that when he talked about, you know, you have too many IOUs, that really means that people have helped you in life along the way and no one ever helped him. So that, I think that's really referring to his real life. Yeah.
I should mention, I didn't like the ending of this movie. Now, the real life ending was even worse. It was totally uneventful. I mean, basically the Tijuana police chief, you know, followed Billy Cook right into a restaurant and arrested him right there. There
Very
was no
anticlimactic.
So they created a fictional ending for the movie. But honestly, for a piece of fiction, I didn't think it was very exciting. I think they could have come up with something a little bit better.
I agree. You probably could have had a more dramatic, interesting ending. But I do think that the director had a bit of a message at the end when you have the two characters supporting each other as they walk away. I mean, literally and figuratively. Because the Cook character taunted them a few times that they were being too supportive of each other, and they should have tried to just escape separately, and they could have done it many times. And I think her message was, these guys, because they stuck together, they kind of survived the situation.
I agree, but I still think the ending wasn't very good. It kind of builds up and builds up, and then there's a big letdown at the end. And, you know, you want a good ending to a movie, especially if you're just going to write a fictional one, you know?
Yes, well, I guess it is unfortunate they didn't fabricate a little more exciting ending, but that was what they came up with.
I mean, knowing really what happened, it's pretty clear they deviated quite a bit from the story. You know, clearly Billy Cook in real life, kidnapped these two men and they drove around and whatever, but I don't think they really know what happened. And therefore, they create all this dialogue and they're driving around through the desert and trying to, hide from the police. Because in real life, we know they hid out in an opal mine, but that's not even shown. And I think something like that may have added a little bit more interest to the story than just driving back and forth. It seemed like they're going in circles for a while in the desert.
Right. But we do have to remember that it was a low budget movie, right? And a lot of times they were driving around probably in the very same area for a number of hours, just trying to make it look like they were traveling you know, through Mexico.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just ask you this. I mean, the movie ran 70 minutes, which is a pretty short movie, But at a certain point, it just seemed like it was getting repetitious.
It was. Yeah, it did. I was kind of like, where are we going with this? I mean, besides traveling a lot. And
yeah, I mean, basically, yeah. They drive for a bit, then they'd stop, sleep and, have a meal and be a little bit more dialogue. Then they get in the car and drive. And it just seemed to repeat itself over and over again, where I think if they had stuck a little bit more to the real life story, there would have been a little bit more variation there. But as you said, it is a low budget movie. So they probably just chose a small locale and that's where they filmed.
Yes. Yeah. And there's very few people in the movie. It's clearly a very low budget film.
Yeah. So Mary Jane, why don't you read the quote that you have there?
Okay. This is the Kansas City Star from May 6, 1953. Talman as the murderous fugitive and Lovejoy and O'Brien as the imperiled men are in almost every minute of the footage of this generally gripping but somewhat repetitious film. All three perform excellently. So this critic also believed that it was rather repetitious. I don't think I'd agree with the comment about it being gripping. For today's standards for movies, it wasn't that suspenseful. But
I would say there was no point in the movie. I was on the edge of my seat. Movies today have become much more violent and much more realistic in what they portray. So probably in 1953, it probably, came across that way as a very, edgiest seat movie.
Absolutely. And as one Boston Globe critic from February 21st, 1953 had to say, he said, "Don't take any children to see The Hitchhiker." And he went on also to say, "And if anyone who sees the film ever picks up A Hitchhiker again, he'll deserve what may happen."
Of course, you got to keep in mind, this is right after he was executed, after Billy Cook was executed. So people, even though, the names are changed and a lot of the events are kind of fictionalized, they knew on the screen who they were watching. They knew that Billy Cook had...
Yeah, who they were referring to.
Right. Sure. He had been a hitchhiker. He picked up these people and he killed them. And it was probably a lot scarier because it was fresh in people's minds.
Right. It was a horrific event that everybody knew about. Yes.
Now, this movie is typically referred to as a film noir, but I didn't really see it as being the classic film noir. There were certain parts of the movie that seemed very claustrophobic. Wherever they're in the car, it's dark and, very, tight scene. On the other hand, you have these big, expansive, bright desert scenes, which is not typical of film noir movies.
I don't know if I agree with that, just because the landscape was very kind of desolate, and there was something kind of lonely and desolate about that you might equate with film noir. I don't consider the movie a quintessentially, film noir, just because there's no femme fatale, right? And usually you have a kind of a detective or a main character that, as much as it's unfortunately he's down on his luck, the spectators really kind of root for that person, and you certainly weren't, rooting for this, killer in any way,
right?
So
I do want to add that there was one character in the movie that really didn't fit, and that was the inspector or the detective or whatever he was from the United States. He's all dressed in a nice suit and he just didn't fit in with the movie. And I'm not even sure his part was so minuscule why they even put him in there.
He could have been a good friend. I mean, if you've read on these low budget movies, sometimes they just grab somebody. I know that Ida Lupino directed another film and she just had her doctor play the doctor in the movie that she was directing. So who knows?
Yeah, he's the only character in the movie that just didn't seem to fit.
Right.
And I thought after the last review that we did, we're calling this Bad Apples because we're both teachers and it seemed like a humorous title. And we chose a score of 1 to 10 for the movies, but really we're teachers, so it should be out of 100. So out of 100, how would you rate this movie?
Wow. I think storyline, I wouldn't rate it very high. I might rate it as a 65. directing was quite good though. I thought the directing was good. So maybe I'd give that an 85.
Yeah. So overall for the movie, you're saying like a 75?
I guess it would average out to somewhere in the 70, 75.
Yeah. I'd put it in the same range. I mean, would you recommend that someone go out of their way to see this movie?
In most cases, no. If the person was interested in women's studies, for example, to see some of the work done by Ida Lupino, yes. Or if they wanted to study cinema, you know, to kind of see how to make a low budget movie, maybe. But I wouldn't recommend it to the average person. No.
Yeah. I would recommend, if you just had some spare time, it's only 70 minutes. The movie is totally free. It's all over the internet. I mean, you can find it on YouTube, archive.org. I think the Library of Congress has a copy of it. So, you know, it's not a bad movie. It's just, I don't think it holds up well to today's standards. And, you know, and part of it is, you know, my bias, and that is that I know the real story. And knowing the real story, I can see how much she deviated from it. And that kind of doesn't sit well with me.
Well, but I saw it before you really had talked about your podcast. Mm-hmm. So I can, you know, I know it's considered a very good movie, you know, as far as cinematic history, you know, for the time period. But yeah, I guess it's all right.
So what I would say is, if you have an hour to kill, you know, it's a Sunday afternoon and you can't think of what to put on, it's well worth watching. But on the other hand, I wouldn't go out of your way to see it.
Right. I would have to agree.
So earlier in the podcast, yes, I asked you a question of how many other women in Hollywood were directing movies at this time. And I know you know the answer. Now, I have to tell you, I haven't really fact-checked this. I just read this in numerous places.
Right.
I'm going to go on the basis that other people have done their research. What is the answer? How many other women were directing movies in Hollywood in the early 1950s?
The answer is there were no other women except Ida Lupino.
Yeah, she was the only one, according to what I read. And you read the same. You read other articles.
Other many articles, yeah.
Yeah, we didn't read the same things. We were just doing our own research. So assuming everybody else has done their research, right, she was the only one at the time.
I also wanted to add that they tend to rave about one of the other movies that she not only directed but acted in, and that was The Polygamist. And I think we ought to try to see it sometime.
We'll have to check
some good stuff about it.
Yeah. Add it to our list. We have a long list of movies we could watch.
She's an impressive woman. You really need to kind of look up her, the different movies that she did, mm-hmm, not only that she directed in, but also acted in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
So, yeah. I was impressed by what I read also. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I guess we should bring this to a close.
Sure.
And I think we've talked longer than the movie is. No.
Oh, dear.
No. But anyway, again, thanks for being on the podcast.
No problem, Steve.
Yes. And I know you're getting into final exams.
Yeah.
It's going to be a very busy time for you. And this has actually been a tough school year with a lot of teaching from home and then back in person and so
Zooming
on.
Zooming in person, back and forth.
Yeah.
Kind of like ping pong.
So it's been kind of hard to get you aside to do this, but I do appreciate that you took the time to do it. I encourage people, if you have nothing to do, go watch the movie. It is available online. Just type in Hitch-Hiker. It's not one word. It's two words with a hyphen in the middle. And it's available for free.
Right.
And free is always good in my book. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'll be back, I guess, in a couple of weeks with a new story. And take care, everyone. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All you need is a few minutes to start your day off with something historic when you listen to the This Day in History podcast. Every day there's a new episode for you to listen and learn about what happened that day way back when. So listen and subscribe to This Day in History wherever you get your podcasts. That's This Day in History wherever you get your podcasts.